Hello, I'm Salman Sheikh. I'm the director of the Brookings Doha Center and a fellow at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy. Syria now is entering into a phase of total war. The regime has been fighting against an increasingly organized and militarized rebel opposition force comprising of both civilians and defectors from the military. That battle has been going on, particularly in the countryside around Damascus, in the north of the country, in Idlib, in Hama, in Homs, some of the bigger cities, as well as towards the east, in cities like Deir ez-Zor. But now, this battle has come quite decisively to Damascus. Over the last few days, we've seen increasing rebel incursions, a sort of a guerrilla war effort from these rebels fighting an asymmetrical campaign. And that was further joined by this supposed attack on some of the inner core of Assad's security apparatus, which led, of course, to the death of Asif Shawkat. Many people consider the keeper of secrets, the number two in the regime, along with Maher al-Assad, the brother of Bashar al-Assad. It is a serious blow to the regime, and shows quite clearly that the regime is under now a severe amount of stress. I don't think we should think, though, that the regime is spent. There is still, I think, a certain coherence. There is still a tight-knit group of particularly Alawi officers who I think will fight pretty much till the end. That's why I say we're entering into a phase or an era of total war in Syria. And I also believe it may not just be confined to within Syria's borders. We will likely see more chance of spillover. Also, in this respect, the speech of Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, yesterday after the events in Damascus, as well as the bellicose tone coming from Tehran, tells us that Assad's main backers are not giving up either. What the events yesterday have done, have given the regime a green light to unleash much greater force on Damascus and its suburbs, which it is doing, than perhaps it would have been able to do even a couple of weeks ago. It has been quite clear to many of us that it is not using its full firepower. But now, faced with the challenge that it has over the last few days in Damascus, it may well be doing so. And the death of some of these core security officials gives them the time, the reason to do it. The time that has lapsed, perhaps, since the death of Asif Shawkat may well have given them time to organize this assault that we're now seeing inside and on the suburbs of Damascus. I think the veto today at the Security Council by Russia and China was expected. We've seen pretty intense efforts over the last few days by members of the Security Council, such as the Western group led by the UK, France, and the United States, to try and change that. We've also seen Kofi Annan, of course, in Moscow over the last couple of days in trying to find some sort of a solution to this. But put simply, the Russians and the Chinese are not willing to sign up to UN Security Council action, which would be under Chapter 7, even if it's under this Article 41, which is not an automatic recourse to the use of force, but more focused on economic sanctions and censuring the regime. The Russians see this still as a slippery, sliding slope to maybe Western intervention, as was in the case of Libya. So we've not been able to break the impasse. Well, the international community and its role will very much depend on whether it can get in touch with the reality of what's going on inside Syria. You know, whilst the talking has been going on in the halls of the UN and the capitals, and the phones have been buzzing, the situation has been spinning out of control, as Secretary Panetta said yesterday. In order for the international community now to play a role, I think it has to actually focus on almost the day after. I don't think a political solution, which is some sort of a deal between the regime and the opposition, is possible right now. I just don't think that the regime will stop in its violence, and it will not negotiate in good faith. And I don't think the rebels are in any mood to stop the fighting, even if they are still only having limited support in terms of guns and armor in order to be able to fight it with this regime. So what does that leave? Where does that leave the international community? Well, I believe that the international community, as I said, has to prepare almost for the day after. It has to think very seriously about a stabilization force which can come into Syria and stop a further security deterioration when the time is right, when we're talking about, in effect, a post-Assad transition. It is clear that the regime right now in the areas of Damascus and other mixed areas is using sort of its support base of core Alawi villages and people, some of whom are being used to attack other areas, particularly Sunni areas. If that continues, I'm afraid we will lead to a situation as the regime weakens further, whereby which there will be reprisals. And I fear that there will be sectarian slaughter on a scale which we've not yet seen. Well, the international community has to start thinking as to how it's going to be able to deal with that, especially in a situation when the regime crumbles. This would be a hard task, but this may be something which they would have to think about. Also, it needs to step up its planning and its efforts with regards to the humanitarian side. It may be in a situation of total conflict. The international community nevertheless still passes resolutions and has a mandate for intervening on humanitarian terms, in terms of trying to get aid into stricken populations. And then there is the whole issue of the post-Assad transition itself. Here, it needs to continue to support the efforts to unite what is still a fractured opposition. I think, put simply, as of today, if the Assad regime was to go down, the Syrian opposition, at least on the outside, is not ready. It's not ready to assume the roles and that very detailed job that it has to do in the transition. As we know, the effort to bring together the Syrian opposition in exile has been continuing apace. The United States, particularly under the efforts and the good efforts of Ambassador Ford, who was, of course, based in Damascus, but is now outside, as well as its counterparts amongst the Turks, the Arabs, and the Europeans, have been trying with the Arab League and the UN to try and forge a common Syrian national platform. Well, that effort is still very much work in progress. And yet the goal has to be a common Syrian national platform bound by a common vision, a common vision for transition, and what would hopefully lead to a common vision for the Syria of the future. That work is now needs to be accelerated. There are efforts, as I said, which are going on. One hopes that there will be a meeting in Bulgaria towards the end of this month, which we at Brookings have also been involved, which is designed to bring together a small group of people from some of the key opposition blocs and get them to focus on bringing and constructing a mechanism, a committee to discuss issues of transition in particular, as well as to discuss longer term issues, but very vital issues such as the Arab-Kurdish relations, for example. That kind of work, as I said, needs to be accelerated. The Syrian National Council has a heavy responsibility in that, but it will not be the only one. And the pressure that is brought to bear on all opposition groups to achieve that common vision based on a common platform will require really concerted efforts of a number of actors in the international community.